This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. It was the Democrats' turn this week, and while it's too soon to know whether President Obama got any bounce from the convention, we know of a few others who did. Our own Governor Deval Patrick got rave reviews for his speech, and Michelle Obama's dress. That's going into mass production, all right? So that ought to jumpstart the economy. It's our week in review. We've got politics. We've also got that controversial decision by federal court judge Mark Wolf to allow convicted murderer Richard Michelle Kosalek a sex change operation. And, of course, we'll have our thumbs up, thumbs down on the people, places, and issues in the news this week. I'm joined here in the studio by attorney and social critic Wendy Kaminer, Dave Wedge, a reporter for the Boston Herald, and Wendy Murphy, attorney and adjunct professor at the New England School of Law. So, all right, so I am not one of these people who goes around saying these conventions are useless and you get nothing out of them and it's just a big waste of time and money and it's just a coronation and celebrity. I actually thought both of them were extremely entertaining. I mean, I was admittedly flipping back and forth between the tennis matches both times. But, I mean, especially last night during Joe Biden because he went so long. But
I'm glad you didn't say you were also watching the NFL game.
I did watch a little of that, too.
You weren't watching the VMAs?
That's right. I had to flip to that for my kids.
But, I mean, highlights, low points for you, Dave, this week.
I actually thought Joe Biden, while he did go a little long, I thought his speech was the best speech I've ever seen him give. I actually thought he was better than the president last night. He was very passionate. I think he spoke to the issues that people care about right now as good as anyone in either convention. And I think he's the big winner out of both of the conventions.
Okay, I got a little of his theatrics here. Here's a little of Joe Biden from last night.
I know this man. Yes, the work of recovery is not yet complete, but we are on our way. The journey of hope is not yet finished, but we are on our way. And the cause of change is not fully accomplished, but we are on our way. So I say to you tonight, with absolute confidence, America's best days are ahead. And yes, we are on our way.
I mean, he really delivered this well. He had the build-ups and the codas, and he had it all going. I have to say, I thought he stepped on his own message by going about 12 minutes too long, but it was good.
Yeah, I think he was good. I think Bill Clinton was very powerful and effective too. And at the end of the day, these things are pep rallies and they're really meant to motivate the base. But, remember, people vote a lot of times these days on personality and character. And that's what these things are designed to do, is to build up the character and the persona of these people, which is why Ann Romney was great for Mitt Romney. Michelle was good for the president. So, they're very theatrical, they're very planned now. And I think the overall tone of the DNC that Joe Biden really hit home, the whole convention really was like, yes, things aren't as good as they were 4 years ago, but we're headed in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And I think that message was hit home.
Yeah. I have a couple of thoughts. One, if you ask for high points, aside from the Clinton speech, which was just a fabulous piece of political performance art, I just loved watching it. It was just fabulous. I really enjoyed seeing people like Lily Ledbetter. Lily Ledbetter was the woman who sued for equal pay. The first law that the president signed was named for her. And what I liked about it was that here, I don't want to say she's an ordinary woman, because she's probably not. She did something extraordinary. Filing these federal lawsuits, it's not easy. But here's this woman from ordinary circumstances who gets up on a stage in front of thousands of people on national TV and gives this impassioned speech. This woman is not a political pro. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there by myself in my den watching it and saying, you go, girl. I just thought that was great. Yeah. I thought one of the low points, another regular person speech, though, was Sandra Fluke or Sandra Flauk, or however she pronounces her name. Because, I really am tired of this sort of culture of umbrage and of all the mileage that people are getting out of the fact that Rush Limbaugh called her a slut. It made her a star. Why can't we just call him a pig and be done with the whole conversation?
And I think Al Franken already did.
Yeah, I just want to say one more thing, is that one of the things that struck me in terms of themes that are coming out of the convention is that they're both painting each other as anti-American. The Republicans do it much more directly. They say Democrats hate America. The Democrats do it with a lot more subtlety. They were very strongly implying, if not stating, that Republicans don't share American values. There was all this talk about American middle-class values, and that's what the Democrats stand for. And the clear implication was that Romney and the Republicans don't stand for American middle-class values. So I found that interesting.
I enjoyed the conventions this year probably more than any other time because I felt like they were intentionally trying to appeal to the middle, and I'm in the middle. And so I really was listening to the themes and seeing how I felt. And I did feel, you know, I felt good about some of what I heard the Democrats saying, even though I'm completely unclear about where I'm going. I did like Joe Biden. I thought, you know, it made the president look flat because Biden was so good stylistically. And I kind of thought, why didn't they give Obama that speech? But maybe that was intentional. Yeah. They wanted him to sound more presidential, more restrained.
Which he did, yeah.
Yeah, he did. And I thought it was fine. I didn't like Biden. Biden's a kind of a weird guy for me. You know, he says these funky things at the wrong times, and calling his wife a kiddo. She's a doctor. I thought that was rude. He was eating potato chips or something crunchy while Deval Patrick was on a roll. And I thought, what is that? I mean, when there's that speech going on and you go to the vice president, a lot he cares about the party when he's like, it was, I there's something weird about that.
That did not detract from Deval Patrick.
I don't like Deval Patrick because I don't like his failure to do anything meaningful on violence against women and children. But I'll call it like I see it. I think his speech was fantastic, although he was a little wet. He kept dripping, it seemed to me.
It's hot up there.
Well, I know, but I mean, it made him look weird. I think he should have mopped his brow a little bit more. But his speech was fabulous. I thought he was probably the most genuine of all. I mean, including Clinton. I thought Clinton was way too long, a little too arrogant. Yeah. And can I be irreverent about Bill Clinton for a second? Because I like him. And I've met him, and he's charismatic, and I totally get why women gush for him. But, oh my God, the finger, and yeah. All I thought about was Lewinsky.
Monica.
And then he had white goo in the corner of his mouth, and I'm like, this is Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky, white goo in the corner of his mouth, shaking that finger. I was grossed out. I couldn't even hear him some of the time because I thought, not just because, I mean, the visual effect of thinking about Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky with the white goo in the finger, I thought, get him off the stage. And he stayed 20 minutes too long.
No, he always speaks too long. And people tend to forget that the longer you talk, the less people remember of what you say.
Yeah,
I mean, the greatest political speeches are short. I mean, Abe Lincoln delivered the Gettysburg Address in the second inaugural while Bill Clinton was clearing his throat.
I mean, Barack Obama was short. The other thing that, Wendy, I'm, believe it or not, much more like you than, I like to listen to everything. I could not get over the differences in the audiences between the Democrats and the Republicans. Mm-hmm. At first you thought, oh, well, you know, the cameras are trained on, you know, people that are dressed in, you know, traditional, you know, native garb and that kind of thing. It wasn't that. Everybody was, I mean, it was the virtual rainbow coalition. Every single shot had African Americans and Asians and at just every imaginable, I mean, it really was a cross-section of America. That you cannot say that about the Republicans.
No, and that made the propping up of the tokens so much more manipulative to me.
For
it's
the
like, oh, well, here's our Hispanic and here's
or
our black
even
guy.
Condoleezza Rice, yeah.
I thought they were both really inappropriate in that way. I felt very manipulated by their propping up of these tokens.
What are they supposed to do? Not let Condoleezza Rice speak? She's
the point is that it seems obvious. You know, she was sort of like
particularly obvious
chosen because she was African.
Well, she's a major figure in the party. She has been for many years.
The problem for Republicans isn't that they're letting Condoleezza Rice speak. I mean, I agree with you. She was certainly a most appropriate speaker for them, and she gave one of the star speeches of the week.
She was
the
best one.
The problem for the Republican Party, as many people have said, is that it is increasingly a party of aging white people, and they need to be worried about their future as they are, which is why they're so concerned about trying to win a much larger share, especially of the Hispanic community, where they have, they have a lot of ways in, especially through religion and through some of the cultural issues. But the immigration is a huge problem.
Well, I don't think it's fair to say it's a party of the aging white population when, and then on the other hand, when they trot out someone like Marco Rubio to say, oh, that's just a token. You know, that's who the party is. Marco Rubio is a rising star in the Republican Party. Condoleezza Rice is a major figure in the Republican Party. Bobby Jindal is, you know, these aren't people that white guys went and sought out and said, hey, let's grab that Spanish guy and make him our next star.
David, nobody is suggesting that when I say that it's...
I just don't think it's fair to say that it's the white party.
You're misunderstanding what I'm saying. I'm not talking about the leadership of the party, and I'm not even talking about the elected officials. I'm talking about the voter base. And if you just look at the, you know, you just go to the Pew Forum and you look at what the demographic base of the parties are, mm-hmm. you'll see that the Republican Party has a much larger share of the white population and a much smaller share of minority populations. And as this becomes a majority-minority nation, everybody recognizes that's a potential problem.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And ultimately, I don't think much of this will last long, these feelings we get from the conventions, because it is all about the economy. It is all about jobs. And I think we're going to hear that as the primary focus, and all this stuff about what everybody looked like won't matter very much.
I think before the conventions, I would have agreed with you and said, yes, this is an election about the economy. But I'm starting to come around on that now, where I think it's really becoming, the social issues are becoming a much bigger factor in this election. I think a lot of people in the middle are concerned by people like Paul Ryan that they fear will bring us backwards on gay marriage and abortion and women's rights issues.
We're not going backwards on any of that stuff.
I agree with you, Wendy.
I agree,
but I think that fear-mongering is effective, and I think it's in people's
minds. Wait a minute. We have, in a lot of states, people have gone very far backward on abortion rights. Abortions are not readily available, if at all. In a lot of states in this country, especially for poorer women, there are more and more...
Really? Like what state?
Oh, I think North Dakota. I think Texas is in trouble. I mean, you know what? I don't want to name the states. Go to the Planned Parenthood website, for example, and I'm sure you can get a list of the states and what the availability is.
And what's covered covered has become an issue in a lot of states.
We've seen a lot of restrictions. We've seen a lot of onerous requirements, like having to, you know, women have to get sonograms. You know, doctors have to go through this list of horribles. I mean, we really have gone somewhat backward on abortion rights.
And
it was interesting. To see the Republicans shying away from talking about the cultural issues and the Democrats emphasizing them. And that tells you something, I think, about where the parties think the voters are.
Yes. Well, the independents, anyway.
I agree.
But, you know, I'm a contributing editor to Women's E-News, and I will say that the editor-in-chief there, Rita Jensen, and I recently spoke about this on air, and she said she's sick to her stomach of women being pandered to about abortion and contraception being the stuff they should care about, because it isn't the most important thing. Violence against women is the most important thing. Equal pay is one of the most important things. And being misdirected and sort of forced to believe that it's an us versus them debate for women, that you're either on the left or the right based on how you feel about contraception, she said, is a false debate being forced on women, and that it is not what they care about most politically.
Talking to Wendy Murphy, Wendy Kaminer, and Dave Wedge. Well, there was a primary here in the state yesterday, too, although did any
of you
vote? Raise your hand.
Oh, I'm embarrassed to say I actually forgot to vote.
I worked the polls.
I was working.
Wendy Murphy voted. How about you, Dave?
I was working.
7 a.m. until 8 p.m.
I was going to vote after work, and I ended up being... I was on deadline after 8 o'clock, so I was
I'm embarrassed.
I usually vote.
I'm embarrassed to admit, I started looking at the results this morning, and I no longer know which one is my congressman. Because of the change. Do you? Well, I live in downtown Boston.
Mike Capuano.
No.
It was Stephen Lynch.
Capuano.
Oh, I don't know. Capuano. I'm in Back Bay, and Capuano is my congressman.
Okay, what number are you? What number?
Really? Do you want me to announce that on the radio?
What? No. What number district
are you?
I don't know.
I just know that Capuano.
I believe Lynch is mine. I'm in Dorchester. So.
All right. Stephen Lynch is the 8th district.
I think you're in the 9th, Emily. I'm in the 9th.
And the 9th is... No, the 9th is Bill Keating. That's what I'm saying.
That's the one that goes up to...
They changed the numbers because we were districted.
There's no 7th on my list here.
The 9th is the Barney Frank one that goes... It snakes through the state up to Newton and Brookline.
Somebody's missing the 7th on
this thing.
Emily, I think you're represented by
Capuano. The 7th is Capuano.
That's you, I think.
That's you.
That's me. Who else is in the back? You said you're in the back bay.
Yeah, Matt Capuano.
Oh, Capuano. All right, well, that's new because it used to be Stephen Lynch. All right, so there was an election here yesterday. Wendy voted. Wendy Murphy, as you made that clear, voted. The only race that's actually kind of interesting, that's too close to call, another one of those election cliches we love to toss out, is the Republican in the 9th District. That's Adam Chaprals and Christopher Sheldon. Who could have named those two?
No.
They are both polling results at 50% with just like 150 votes between them.
That's to run against
Keating,
right?
That's to run against Bill Keating, yeah.
And Keating won his primary over Sutter.
Which was no surprise.
59% to 41%. And then basically everybody else was uncontested. And then, of course, you had the interesting 4th District, and that's going to be Sean Bilant versus Joe Kennedy III, and, you know, I don't think there's going to be a big surprise
That'll be another bloodbath, I believe.
I don't know if it'll be a bloodbath.
No, I mean the result.
No, I understand.
I think Joe Kennedy will beat him handily.
60-30,
at least. Joe Kennedy is expected to beat him, but yeah. You never know. Nobody expected Scott Brown to end up our senator.
Which, by the way, is not a very, pro-democracy reality for us, that as long as your name is Kennedy, you win. You could run for anything and just be, I'm going to change my
name.
He's
a very appealing
candidate. Because there have been several Kennedys who have
Caroline,
very
Max.
Badly.
In Massachusetts?
Yes, Max.
Max Kennedy.
What did he run for?
You don't even remember.
Well, that's true.
That's
he didn't try very hard.
Oh, well, he was a disaster.
No, I do think this young Kennedy guy is very appealing. He's handsome. He's smart. He was a prosecutor. He's doing all the right things. And I think that the Kennedy family legacy is not unworthy. I'm just saying I don't like lemming-like politics. It's unthoughtful.
I agree with you, Wendy, but in this particular case with Joe Kennedy, and I said the same thing at first. I was like, here we go, another Kennedy's just going to steal the seat. He is worthy of that blind support of the Kennedys. He's more like Ted and the great
Joe.
Kennedy politicians than he is like the ones that, you know, the Michael Kennedys and the Patrick Kennedys of the world.
I don't think it's blind support. There's a little bit of that, but I think he's a very good retail campaigner. I think he comes across really well. I think, you know, I think people
he
are going to like
week.
Him on
he
his
was
own
good
merits.
Also.
He's very talented.
Yeah. He's sharp
very
kid.
Articulate.
Very sharp.
Really cute.
Yeah.
He's so cute.
Is that appropriate?
Right. Yes,
I love the ginge.
Sure,
you know, the ginge, isn't that what they call them?
Talking about dresses, we can talk about cute guys. All right, we're talking to David Wedge, reporter for the Boston Herald, Wendy Murphy, who's an attorney and adjunct professor at the New England School of Law, and attorney and social critic Wendy Kaminer. Now on to my favorite story of the week. Judge Mark Wolf.
Oh, goodness.
Federal Judge Mark Wolf, who I should say I know quite well socially, just by chance, anyway. So I don't have any insight into any of his rulings, just know that, but I do,
sure
I do
that?
Know him. Yeah, I do. In fact, I asked him to come on the show this week, and he said, of course he couldn't, because he couldn't possibly talk about this. But he ruled this week after, actually, this case has been in the courts. Well, the murder happened in
1990, 25 years.
Robert Kosolek has started transitioning right after he was convicted of this murder, and 3 years into his prison sentence, he was getting hormone treatments and growing his hair and all that. Anyway, he has sued the state for first, hormone treatments. He won that, and then he went for the full Monty, as we say. He was asking the state to pay for a sex change operation, and this week, Judge Mark Wolf ruled that under the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution, cruel and unusual punishment, he should have that, because to keep him in prison under the conditions that he's living is cruel and unusual punishment, because he's got this serious mental disorder and he's technically he believes he's a woman, and he ruled that he should. I've loved all the commentary on this. I thought today there was yesterday Yvonne Abrams in the Boston Globe took Mark Wolf's side. Today Larry Harmon in the Boston Globe. I have to say I think I sided more with Larry Harmon, who just thought the thing was outrageous and thought the judge took liberties he didn't have to take.
Well, one question I have about it, two things. One, I think Mark Wolf decided the way that he thought. I think it was an honest ruling on his part. But I also wonder if maybe his end game here is to get it to the Supreme Court, hoping the state will challenge and it will go to the Supreme Court, and let the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, rule on this issue. The other problem I have with it is this guy killed his wife. And, you know, now he gets the procedure. Now he's a woman. Now if they move into framing him, the guy's already killed a woman. How do we know he's not going to kill female prisoners?
Yeah, but other women
I think it's a risk.
Kill women prisoners.
Yeah,
but he's a man. He's a man who killed a woman.
I had time to read his opinion very carefully yesterday, and Let me just tell you what struck me about it, because I think there are a lot of misconceptions about what Mark Wolf actually ruled. He didn't decide that Kosolek had a serious medical condition.
Mental.
But a mental condition which is considered a serious medical need and a serious illness. Department of Corrections doctors decided that he had this recognized major medical illness. Department of Corrections doctors said that the only adequate medical treatment for this illness was a sex change operation at this point. The standard that Judge Wolf set that Kosolek had to meet was very high. Kosolek had to show that he had a serious medical disorder, as defined by these doctors, that he was being denied adequate treatment for it, not superior treatment, but adequate treatment for it, that department officials knew that if he was denied this treatment, he would suffer serious harm, and that they denied him this treatment dishonestly. They denied him this treatment for fake reasons.
Like
They didn't deny him the treatment for security reasons, as they claimed. They denied it because especially Kathleen Dennehy, a former commissioner, was concerned about the political fallout. And what was most striking to me about Wolf's opinion is that he repeatedly stressed that the former commissioner had lied, had engaged in, this is his language, she engaged in a prolonged pattern of pretense, pretext, and prevarication. You do not often read an opinion from a federal judge where he so clearly and directly and repeatedly calls out a public official for lying. Judges don't like to be lied to. And people are upset about the waste of money in this case.
Yeah,
the waste
of money just weighed in on this case. Elizabeth Warren just weighed in.
The waste of money in this case was occasioned by the Department of
Corrections. Not a good use of taxpayer dollars.
Interesting.
Well, of course she's going to say that.
Can I just say for Senate? Can I say a couple things? First of all, the people who lie the most in federal court in front of Judge Wolf are accused criminals. And, you know,
that's irrelevant.
No, it's not irrelevant.
It's irrelevant to this case.
It's not irrelevant to the point that judges don't like to be lied to, but it does happen a lot in court. But I want to say a couple things. One is that every other federal court, including very liberal jurisdictions like California, when asked to rule on this very question, said it is not constitutionally required. There's no constitutional right to a vagina. There's no constitutional cruel and unusual punishment argument here. Because why? Because hormones and therapy work for everybody. Now, mind you, you know, it's one thing to say, well, it didn't work for this guy. Isn't it interesting that it works for all the other transgender prisoners? And there are plenty of them out there. So if it works for everybody else and this guy just happened to start trying to commit suicide after Judge Wolf's first ruling when he said therapy and hormones would be enough for you, I would call that a kind of pretext, my pretextual attempts to kill myself because I needed to beef up my evidence. I don't like it. By the way, I'm writing my column in the Patriot Ledger is all on this case this weekend, patriotledger.com. Check it out, because a couple of things I say, and I think Judge Wolf is a decent man. I know people who know him. He's a good guy. He's thoughtful. He's got passion. But I think and Wendy's right that there's a lot in there that's, I forget what you said, but repeated. He repeats over. It is so full of redundancies. There's so much protest, too much tone to it, that I almost think he knows that he's going to get reversed. So maybe Dave is right. The Supreme Court has had a chance to rule on this issue from other jurisdictions. They've denied cert because all the other courts have gone the other way, which is an indication that they think not granting the surgery is the correct federal constitutional decision. So maybe he is setting this up. And I mean, this court is not inclined, given its current makeup, to affirm Judge Wolf. And they love reversing the Ninth Circuit. They love reversing the First Circuit. I don't think this decision is going to last. And it isn't just about money. It's the absurdity of rewarding a prisoner with an expensive treatment that ordinary law-abiding transgender people cannot get in the real world.
Well, he acknowledged that's part of being a prisoner. You get rights that people...
You don't get that much extra. You should never get that much extra. You might get treatment that other people can't afford. You don't get that much extra.
He said not ideal treatment. You get treatment.
You get minimally adequate medical treatment.
This is way past minimal.
It wasn't Judge Wolf who decided that this was adequate medical treatment. It was the doctors who decided that.
And that's where I've got a problem.
Let's just keep in mind.
Not all the doctors agreed.
Wendy,
he just rejected the ones he didn't agree with.
May I finish? May I please finish?
Right, don't need to stop saying that. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I need to stop being interrupted.
All right.
And now I've lost my train of thought. So I'm simply that, right. that was a good tactic.
I'm going to go to Dave Wedge on this.
I'm simply going to say that Wendy's written about this. I've written about her at theatlantic.com. If it's not up today, it'll be up on Monday.
I just think it sets a dangerous precedent. And I think that, you know, the jails have an obligation to protect prisoners from harm. But there's a lot of inmates that are suicidal for myriad reasons. Some of them medical, some of them mental. And I think to say that
some of them bogus.
Right, some of them bogus. And you know, inmates are notorious for malingering. And I think it's just an insane concept to say that this is the only solution. And I think it probably will get reversed. That's
well, the first circuit, and in fact, Judge Wolf cited this case, there was a case called, I think it's Batista v. Clark, that was decided in the First Circuit a couple of years ago that also involved a transsexual prisoner in Massachusetts who was fighting to get hormone treatments, not a sex change operation, but hormone treatments. The First Circuit upheld an order giving him hormone treatments, and it noted that also in that case, the Department of Corrections had been quite disingenuous in their reasons for denying it. And the implication is that the Massachusetts Department of Corrections has developed a habit of acting in bad faith when transsexual prisoners request treatment. And that may also have affected Judge Wolf's decision.
Well, there's also inmates that can't get treatment for cancer or toothache, so I don't think hormone therapy is at the top of the list. They're dealing with populations that are trying to kill each other. They're trying to kill their employees. And in my opinion, transsexual issues are far down on the list.
And, you know, not for nothing, the DOC, nobody should lie in court, and the government no less so.
The government more
but,
so.
But the government, the Department of Corrections is up to its eyeballs with false lawsuits, lying
exactly.
prisoners, fake claims. I mean, you almost can't blame them for lowering their standards when they have to fight against false claims and experts who'll say anything for cash. By the way, has anybody thought about the idea that castration in almost any other environment would itself be cruel and unusual punishment?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the irony of cutting off somebody's genitals as an award. It strikes me as the strangest thing one can do in the name of government justice and good medical treatment. And I realize that is an accepted
also,
form of treatment, but it's
the
weird.
The thing that just bothers me about this whole thing is it's such a convenient illness. I mean, did he have this when he killed the wife?
Yes, he
did.
He thought he was going to live
the rest of his life as a single woman or something like that. But the guy clearly has some sort of mental disorder. But who says, does this disorder make you violent? I don't understand that. Which disorder does he have?
Well, no, he likes cross-dressing, and he was angry that his wife thought that was weird, so he killed her.
Yeah.
Lots of men cross-dress, and they're perfectly decent people.
And he's in prison for the rest of his life. This is a guy
where
who
he should
sentence.
Be suffering.
This is well. See, that's where you and I differ. I think that people who commit murder should be often, in a lot of cases, in prison for life, mainly to protect the rest of society from their violent behavior, but I don't think that as a society we should decide that it's our job to inflict pain and suffering on people.
He should feel pain and suffering because he should feel bad for being a murderer. And we needn't repair him for that pain. That's actually good for people. It makes it reminds them that they're
well,
supposed to be moral.
Well, he's not in pain because he feels bad about murdering
that's
his wife.
Your say.
He is, that's
what you
well,
say.
That's what the doctors
claims.
Say. That's what the doctors say. And I don't – let me also just say finally that – If we get behind a move that's, say, now happening in the Massachusetts legislature to somehow reverse this, I don't think they really can because it's a constitutional decision by a federal court. But putting that aside, if we decide that we ought to have legislation that would disallow this kind of a procedure for a prisoner, we're basically saying that we want legislators to play doctor. And
that's
we can
not
see
true.
Well, no, that
well,
is
Mark
true.
Mark Wolf played doctor to us.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he
followed.
Did.
No, he didn't.
Yeah,
he said that
their,
the Department of Correction.
Their line
he
when
said
he
the Department.
It.
Yep.
He said the Department of Correction was obliged to follow the recommendations of their own doctors.
Right, and you raise a good point though about his criticism of Kathleen Dennehy. That strikes me as possibly a factor in this ruling. And you know, was he punishing Kathleen Dennehy in this decision?
I think he was punishing the public for being biased against this guy because he looks weird, and there are people who think it's creepy, and that's unfortunate. But a judge's job is not to punish the public for thinking bad thoughts about what looks creepy to them. You don't overcompensate for bigotry by rewarding an entire class of people who should be in mental pain for killing human beings with the medical care of their choice. It's absurd.
I agree.
By the way, where do you stand on the Boston Globe's policy of referring to the gender as the person as they identify themselves? So they call Kosolek she. Now, the Herald doesn't do that.
Well, I when I've written about it, we've always called the style for the Herald is Robert Kosolek, who changed his name to Michelle, and
but then what's
subsequent
the comment
references,
from him?
We just use the name Kosolek.
Yeah.
You know,
Larry Harmon today went back and forth. Did you notice?
I understand.
Is that true?
You know,
I didn't notice.
You know, the transgender community will tell you that you refer to them as the sex that they want you to, and I respect that.
You do?
I respect it, but I mean, you know, it's like he is a man. He's still a man. He may think he's a woman, but he's
still a man.
He's a man.
Yeah, that's his problem.
All right. Before we move on to our thumbs up, thumbs down subject, I just want to touch briefly on the Boston University internal report that was released this week. It was talking about the culture of sexual entitlement there, and then a little bit more detail, well, quite a bit more detail came out this morning, and some of the elements of the report that had been redacted from public view. I have to say, first of all, I thought that Boston University handled this extremely well, that they released the report publicly, that Robert Brown, the president of the university, sent that letter to the Boston University community at large detailing what the task force had found and what recommendations it had made and how they were going to implement the recommendations. And they also timed it to the beginning of the school year. Otherwise, it could have been buried if they had released it in July. So I thought they did everything pretty much right.
I couldn't disagree with you more, Emily. They released – there's two reports. There's the public report, and then there's this one that the Globe got a hold of. And then the one that the Globe got a hold of is the one that has the real story where these kids –
It has the details.
It has the details where apparently these kids were allowed to act like animals and run around wild, naked on the ice and having sex in the penalty box and all this crazy stuff, if you believe that report. And the school knew about it, and nothing was done. And in my opinion, it doesn't rise to the level, obviously, of Penn State, but it certainly sheds light on the culture there, and it raises serious questions about the school's culpability here. What were they doing? Why wasn't this reported? And if it was reported, why wasn't their action taken? Full disclosure, I'm a BC student, so BU's BC grad, so BU's not my favorite place. But I will say that if I, you know, any BU student or BC student that behaved that way would be expelled. And the fact that the hockey players did that, Coach Jack Parker knew about it and took no disciplinary action against these kids, raises huge questions.
Yeah, I agree. He should have been ousted.
About the school.
Yeah. He's another one of those star guys that they don't want to oust. It's like the Rick.
What struck me about it was that, you know, aside from all the obvious, really offensive and potentially violent sexism that's involved in all of this, I think it's not just a story about a really sexist culture. It's a story about how this quasi-professional sports is corrupting undergraduate education. You know, these are, one of the things that was mentioned in the Globe story was that some of these hockey players were already under contract.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or about to be under contract. They weren't really there as students. They were there as hockey players.
They were already hockey players.
They were you're right. They were transitioning. They were there as hockey players.
They're 22-year-old freshmen. You know, they're 22.
Right. And they're there to probably gin up contributions from alumni. You know, they're there for all kinds of reasons that really have very little to do with education. Mm-hmm. And really they're not, it seems as if they're not being treated like students.
Okay. The other thing, I agree with Wendy that that there is something about the impact on education that it's just shocking for there to be so little concern about the value of education. And maybe it's that most of those guys are never going to need to learn anything because they're going to make millions for skating. But it seems wrong. It seems sick. It seems perverted. BU, to their credit, I have to say I come down a little bit in the middle between Emily and Dave because BU, to its credit, did something. Mm-hmm. Most schools have very similar problems, and they do nothing. The D1 schools and the Ivies, all the elite schools, have huge sexual assault problems, particularly with athletes who are entitled, have always been entitled. They land at colleges that then support that entitlement. Rape happens a lot with impunity. They never get in trouble. University of Montana is currently under both DOJ and DOE investigation for never, ever, ever punishing any athlete there. Harvard Law School, Princeton University are both currently under investigation by the Office for Civil Rights of the Department of Education for having rules in place that violate women's rape victims, in particular civil rights on campus.
Well, I would just say Wendy and I would disagree about the merits of those rules. And that's probably a conversation for another time.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is they're under investigation because it is so prolific. The problem is so prolific. So give BU credit. It's the only school in the ones I just listed that actually has self-flagellated, right, about it. And yet what they proposed in terms of reforms, in my opinion, will not fix the problem because they don't encourage outside oversight. They're not encouraging criminal reporting. And then they're proposing for the guys, this one cracks me up, that they should be trained.
Training.
These athletes should be trained in how not to commit sexual assault. As if.
All right.
It's silly.
Talking to New England School of Law professor Wendy Murphy, Wendy Kaminer, attorney and social critic, and Dave Wedge from the Boston Herald. When we come back, thumbs up, thumbs down. Here's one to get you thinking. Which Boston superstar athlete is currently a fashion intern for GQ magazine? You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney.
Why Chef Susan Regis and co-owner Mary Catherine Dybel from Upstairs on the Square will be at the Taste of WGBH Food and Wine Festival.
Well, I love the fact that this is centered around Julia's 100th birthday.
We're going to be making a very famous red pepper soup, so many red peppers, cream and butter, all owed to Julia.
She loved our red pepper soup.
You will too. Limited tickets for the Taste of WGBH Food and Wine Festival still available at wgbh.org/festival.
This program is made possible thanks to you and Merrimack Repertory Theater presenting the new comedy Homestead Crossing by William Donnelly, running September 6th through September 30th. For more information, you can visit mrt.org. That's mrt.org. And the Harvard Innovation Lab, where entrepreneurs from across Harvard, the Alston community, Boston, and beyond engage in teaching and learning in pursuit of taking their innovative ideas to the world. ilab.harvard.edu.
This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. It is time for our Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down segment, where we ask our panel for pithy takes on news items, large and small, from the week. Joining me here today are attorney and adjunct professor at the New England School of Law, Wendy Murphy, attorney and social critic, Wendy Kaminer, and Boston Herald reporter, Dave Wedge. All right. Thumbs up, thumbs down on a certain Boston superstar working as a fashion intern for GQ magazine, talking about Rajon Rondo. What do you think there, Dave?
Thumbs down. Get in the gym.
Get in the gym?
Oh, you know, if that's what he wants to do, thumbs up, because I don't really care.
How about thumb right in the middle? I think he's adorable and, you know, will probably help sell products. But his job, I think Dave's right, is... score points, isn't
it? No, I think it's a huge thumbs up. This is like along the lines of Shaq O'Neal dressing up as a Halloween, you know.
Yeah, and how'd that work?
Something
he flamed out in his career.
He was already out by the time he was doing that. This is just kind of cute. I think
it
is great.
Cute.
I like it.
It's good promotion for the Celtics.
I'm not sure I quite understand it. I don't even know how it came about. Is he interested in fashion?
Apparently.
I don't know.
Seriously?
I smell a reality TV show.
Yeah, you could be right about that. All right. I can't even bear to do this one about the Patriots. We'll skip that one, Edgar, and maybe get to it later. All right. I sort of like this one. Thumbs up, thumbs down on Katie Couric calling the Duchess of whatever that is, Kate Middleton, too thin.
She's right. Thumbs up. Thumbs up for Katie saying that out loud. I hate seeing how skinny she is.
Look how thin you are.
No, I am not a size zero. First of all, I'm not a size zero. She is at least a zero, if not less. And she looks to me emaciated. And I can't understand why. She knows all these little girls are looking up to her. I don't want to make her eat for the sake of influencing young girls to have healthy habits. But I have so much disdain for the super thin. If it's anybody, whether it's a singer or queen or whatever the hell she is. You know, girls have eating disorders in record numbers, and it's terrible. It's just so destructive.
Right.
I give Katie Couric a thumbs up. I think she should say whatever she wants to say. I also agree that Kate Middleton is a little, is awfully thin, but that's not really the point. Kate Middleton can certainly take care of herself. She's pretty well protected and pretty well privileged, and Katie Couric should say whatever she damn pleases.
Yeah, I'd say thumbs up. She's a journalist and a pundit.
She's free to say what she wants.
She
took a kind of a beating this week on some of the, you know, evening, you know, entertainment shows, but I agree.
Although I have to say that Katie Couric looks much more healthy than Kate Middleton, in my opinion.
As Kate's go.
Thumbs up, thumbs down for you gals. Would you run out and buy Michelle Obama's Tracy Reese dress, which is now going to be made in, that was a one-off, I guess, but now it's going to be in mass production.
Now, which one was this?
The pink one with the blue
trim. Yes, I did like that. I tell you, that's the one I'd buy faster than that white, fluffy, feathery thing that made her look like a big fat goose at the inaugural ball.
Whoa. Speaking of commenting on women's
bodies. She looked terrible. She is not fat, but she's big, and she looked horrible.
She's athletic. She's not a big
She looked horrible in that goose dress.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Well, I give Michelle Obama a good thumbs up on how great she looked. Yep. But, you know, I kind of give a thumbs down on this impulse that people have to want to copy whatever celebrities are wearing. And one of the things that I always find disturbing about these conventions is all the hero worship that you see in the eyes of the people there. I find it a little distressing.
Yeah,
I agree. Thumbs down. Get your own style.
All right. Here's a town that has its own style. The state this week upheld the Concord, Massachusetts bottled water ban. Thumbs up, thumbs down on that. Starting with Andy Kaminer.
You know, I give a slight thumbs down on the ban because I think it's silly, but I give a bigger thumbs down on the fact that people seem to care more and focus much more on these really trivial but irritating bans than on the really large deprivation of civil liberties that's been occasioned by the war on terror. They care more about the fact that they can't buy a bottle of water than the fact that they're under surveillance all the time.
Thumbs way down. I want a bottle of water, and I should be able to buy one, period.
I have mixed feelings.
In Concord.
It's a free country, though. I mean, you know, why should Concord?
But it's not a free country, Dave. That's my point.
It should be.
It's not free in a lot more important
ways.
Well,
it's less free because I can't buy water in Concord.
But you know, so many people buy water for the wrong reasons, and it is mass-produced, and it's forcing you to consume water from a plastic bottle that's probably giving you cancer, and it kills the landfills and all this stuff. So I'm not against these kinds of rules that make us behave better. I agree with Wendy in the sense that is this the most important thing they could have spent their energy on?
Well, it was just one little item. It wasn't like the most important thing, but they got it through. And the state upheld it. Right? Mm-hmm. What can you say? All right, moving on here. Thumbs up, thumbs down. This is a political one. On Democratic Party Chair John Walsh calling out Senator Scott Brown as an honorary girl for folding laundry in that TV ad.
It was a stupid remark, you know, who cares? It's not going to do It's not going to do anybody any harm. Right, it was just a stupid joke. The only person it might harm is John Walsh because he said something stupid.
If it was a Republican who had said it about a Democrat, you'd be singing a different
tune. That's not true, Dave.
Thumbs way down. It was a completely sexist, inappropriate comment.
It was a stupid comment, but as I say, I'm tired of this culture of umbrage. You know, I'm tired of hearing about Rush Limbaugh calling Sandra Fluke a slut, and this is trivial and stupid.
Well, the extent to which it is politicized, I think, is annoying to me as well because it does waste my energy as a woman because it is dumb. But I would put John Walsh and Todd Akin on an island together and let them.
Todd Akin is, of course, the representative.
Let them be weird and stupid together.
Let them yak each other to death.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of Republicans going out on the line, thumbs up, thumbs down on Paul Ryan shaving an hour and a half off of his marathon time.
Thumbs down. That's ridiculous.
I mean, he said he ran the marathon in 2 hours and 50-something minutes.
That will put him.
It was actually 4 hours, 1 minute, and 25 seconds.
What was his explanation again? I heard
he misspoke.
Misspoke?
I think
people
that was his
that's
explanation.
Another thing. Thumbs up, thumbs down on misspeaking. Yeah, lying.
It's a fish story, you know. I caught a fish that was 20
It's a fish
pounds.
Story. And you can look at this as a very inconsequential boast, but my experience has shown me that people who will lie about little things have no compunction about lying about
Agreed.
Big things.
Well, let me say that having run a marathon, the Boston Marathon myself many moons ago, I never, ever, ever get it wrong when I boast about having finished in 4 hours and 40 minutes.
I'm impressed.
You can't get that wrong, is my point. You can't misspeak
right,
about it.
You don't get that wrong, no. Especially
it's
if it's under
painful.
3 hours.
Yeah, right.
All right, here we go. Final thumbs up, thumbs down on Ben and Jerry's ice cream suing a porn company after it's using parody of names like peanut butter, D-cup, Boston cream, thigh.
Thumbs down on the lawsuit. It's free advertising for Ben and Jerry's, and it's funny.
Thumbs down on the lawsuit unless there's something about trademark law involved here that I don't understand.
That's their argument. That's what they're saying.
Well, but yeah, they I don't know if they need to do this in order to preserve their trademark.
Same colors and same fonts.
They might need to
that,
do it. I don't know.
Thumbs down.
Thumbs
Stupid.
Down on making light of porn. I hate porn. It ruins women's lives, and it's too violent.
All right. Wendy Murphy, Wendy Kaminer, Dave Wedge. Have a good weekend, everybody.
You too.
You too.
Thank
All
you.
Right.
Callie Crossley is back in the studio.
Emily, can you name this tune?
I can.
Go ahead.
Odd Couple.
There you go. It's the theme to The Odd Couple, the quintessential roommate film with all the students back in town, with the economy and cost of housing forcing people to live with roommates. We're looking at the movies that explore the pros and cons of shared living. Do you remember your last roommate situation, Emily?
Yeah.
It was that good. All righty. I'm Callie Crossley.
I'm Emily Rooney, and this is Boston Public Radio.